Scripture, ancient music and poems, talks and stories given at the Osho Kumbh International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
The first question. Is sin the path of surrender? Then how come the basic teaching of Buddha is be a light unto yourself? The essential surrender happens within you. It has nothing to do with anybody outside you. The basic surrender is a relaxation, a trust. So don't be misguided by the word. Linguistically, surrender means to surrender to somebody. But religiously, surrender simply means trust, relaxing. It is an attitude rather than an act. You live through trust. Let me explain. You swim in water. You go to the river and swim. What do? You trust water. A good swimmer trusts so much that he almost becomes one with the river. He is not fighting. He does not grab the water. He is not stiff and tense. If you are stiff and tense, you will be drowned. If you are relaxed, the river takes care. That's why whenever somebody dies, the dead body floats on the water. This is a miracle, amazing. The alive person died and was drowned by the river, and the dead person simply floats on the surface. What has happened? The dead person knows some secret about the river which the alive persons did not know. The alive person was fighting. The river was the enemy. He was afraid. He could not trust. But the dead person, not being there, how can he fight? The dead person is totally relaxed with no tension. Suddenly, the body surfaces. The river takes care. No river can drown a dead person. Trust means you are not fighting. Surrender means you don't think life as the enemy, but as the friend. Once you trust the river, suddenly you start enjoying. A tremendous delight arises in you, splashing, swimming, or just floating, or diving deep. But you are not separate from the river. You merge. You become one. Surrender means to live the same way in life as a good swimmer swims in the river. A life is a river. Either you can fight or you can float. Either you can push the river and try to go against the current, or you can float with the river and go wherever the river leads you. Surrender is not towards somebody. It is simply a way of life. A god is not needed. to surrender. There are religions which believe in God. There are religions which don't believe in any God. But all the religions believe in surrender. So surrender is the real God. Even the concept of God can be discarded. Buddhism does not believe in any God. Jainism does not believe in any God. But they are religions. Christianity believes in God. Islam believes in God. Sikhism believes in God. They are also religions. The Christian teaches surrender to God. God is just an excuse to surrender. It is a help. Because it will be difficult for you to surrender without any object. The object is just an excuse, so that in the name of God you can surrender. Buddhism says simply surrender. There is no God. You relax. It is not a question of some object. It is a question of your own subjectivity. Relax. Don't fight. Accept. The belief in God is not needed. In fact, the word belief is ugly. It does not sow trust. It does not sow faith. Belief is almost the very opposite of faith. The word belief comes from a root, lief. Lief means to desire, to wish. Now let me explain it to you. You say, I believe in God, the compassionate. What exactly you are saying? You are saying, I wish that there was a God who is compassionate. Whenever you say, I believe, you say that I intensely desire. But you don't know. If you know, there is no question of belief. Do you believe in the trees here? Do you believe in the sun which arises every morning? Do you believe in the stars? No question of belief. You know that the sun is there, the trees are there. Nobody believes in the sun, otherwise you will say he is mad. If somebody comes and says, I believe in sun, and tries to convert you, you will say, you have gone mad. I have heard one anecdote. A certain lady, Lady Luce, was appointed ambassador to Italy by the United States of America. She was a recently converted Catholic. And of course, when people become converted, they are very enthusiastic. And she was boring everybody. Whosoever will come in contact, she will try to make him a Catholic. The story goes, when she went to Italy as the ambassador, she went to see the Pope. A long discussion followed. It went on and on. One press reporter slipped closer and closer just to hear what is going on. Pope has never given so much time to anybody. And the discussion seems to be very heated and hot. There is going something. And when the Pope is talking so long to the ambassador of the richest and the strongest nation in the world, there is going to be some news. Just to overhear, he came closer and closer. He could hear only one sentence. The Pope was saying in a faltering English, Lady, you don't understand me. I am already a Catholic. She was trying to convert Pope. If somebody comes and says to you, believe in the Son, you will say, I am already a Catholic. I already believe, you don't be worried about it. Because you know. Somebody asks Sri Aurobindo, do you believe in God? He says, no. Of course, the questioner was very much shocked. He had come from far away, from Germany. And he was a great seeker of God. And he was hoping much. And this man simply says a flat no. He said, but I was thinking that you have known him. Aurobindo says, yes, I have known him, but I don't believe in him. Once you know, what is the point of belief? Belief is in ignorance. If you know, you know. And it is good if you don't know, know that you don't know. The belief can deceive you. The belief can create an atmosphere in your mind where, without knowing, you start thinking that you know. Belief is not trust. And the stronger you say that I believe totally, the more you are afraid of the doubt within you. Trust knows no doubt. Belief is just repressing the doubt. It is a desire. When you say, I believe in God, you say, I cannot live without God. It will be too difficult to exist in this darkness, surrounded by death, without a concept of God. That concept helps. One doesn't feel alone. One doesn't feel unprotected, insecure. Hence, belief. Martin Luther has written that my God is a great fortress. These words cannot come from a man who trusts. My God is a great fortress. Martin Luther seems to be on the defensive. Even God is just a fortress to protect you, to feel you secure. Then it is out of fear. That sentence, that God is my greatest fortress, is born out of fear, not out of love. It is not of trust. Deep down there is doubt and fear. Trust is simple. It is just like a child trusts in his mother. Not that he believes. Belief has yet not entered. You were a small child someday. Did you believe in your mother? Are you trusted? The doubt has not arisen. So what is the question of belief? Belief comes only when the doubt has entered. Doubt comes first. Later on, to suppress the doubt, you catch hold of a belief. Trust is when doubt disappears. Trust is when doubt is not there. For instance, you breathe, you take a breath in. Then you exhale, you breathe out. Are you afraid in breathing out? Because who knows, it may come back, it may not come back. You trust it will come. Of course, there is no reason to trust. What is the reason? Why it should come back? You can at the most say in the past it has been happening so, but that is not a guarantee. It may not happen in the future. If you become afraid of breathing out because it may not come back, then you will hold your breath in. That is what belief is. Clinging, holding. But if you hold your breath in, your face will go purple and you will feel suffocated. And if you go on doing that, you will die. All beliefs suffocate, and all beliefs help you not to be really alive. They deaden your being. You exhale. You trust in life. The Buddhist word nirvana simply means exhaling out, trusting, breathing out. Trust is a very, very innocent phenomenon. Belief is of the head, trust is of the heart. One simply trusts life because you are out of life. You live in life, you will go back again to the source. There is no fear. You are born, you live, you will die. There is no fear. You will be born again, you will live again, you will die. It is a wheel. The same life that has given you life can always give you more life. So why be afraid? Why cling to beliefs? Beliefs are man-made. Trust is God-made. Beliefs are philosophical. Trust has nothing to do with philosophy. Trust simply shows that you know what love is, not a concept of God who is sitting somewhere in the heaven and manipulating and managing. Trust needs no God. This infinite life, this totality is more than enough. Once you trust, you relax. That relaxation is surrender. Now, is Zen the path of surrender? Yes. Religion as such is surrendering, relaxing. Don't cling to anything. Clinging shows that you don't trust life. Muhammad used to distribute every evening whatsoever he had collected in the day. All. Not even a single pie he will save for tomorrow. Because he says, the same source that has given today will give me tomorrow. If it has happened today, why be untrusting about tomorrow? Why save? But when he was dying and he was very ill, the wife became worried. Even in the midnight, a physician may be needed. So 5 rupees, 5 dinars, she saved that evening, afraid that nobody knows. He may become too much ill in the night and some medicine may be needed. And in the middle of the night, where I will go? Or a doctor may be needed. and the feast will have to be given. Not saying anything to Muhammad, she said 5 dinars. Near about the midnight, Muhammad opened his eyes and he said, I feel certain untrust around me. It seems something has been saved. The wife became very much afraid and she said, excuse me, but thinking that something may be needed in the night, I have saved just 5 dinars. Muhammad said, you go out and give it to somebody. She said, in this mid of the night, who is going to be there? Muhammad said, you just listen and let me die peacefully. Otherwise, I will feel guilty. Guilty against my God. And if he will ask me, I will feel ashamed that at the last moment I died in deep untrust. You go out. The wife went out, of course unbelieving, but a beggar was standing there. When she came back, Muhammad said, look, he manages well. And if we meet, then a donor will be standing outside the door. You don't be worried. He pulled over his blanket and died immediately, relaxed totally. Clinging to anything, anything whatsoever, shows distrust. If you love a woman or a man and you cling, that simply shows you don't trust. If you love a woman and you say, tomorrow also, you will be loving me or not. If you go to the court to get married, you don't trust. You trust more in the court, in the police, in the law, than in love. You are preparing for tomorrow. If this woman or this man tries to deceive you tomorrow or leaves you in the ditch, you can take the support from the court and the police, and the law will be with you, and the whole society will support you. You are making arrangements, afraid. But if you really love, love is enough, more than enough. Who bothers about tomorrow? But deep down there is doubt. Even while you think you are in love, doubt continues. A story is said, when Jesus resurrected after his crucifixion, the first person to see him back alive was Mary Magdalene. She had loved him tremendously. She ran towards him. In the New Testament, it is said, Jesus says, don't touch me. I became a little suspected. Because Jesus, in saying, don't touch me, does not look right. Something somewhere has gone wrong. Of course, it is okay if a Pope says, don't touch me. But a Jesus saying, don't touch me, almost impossible. So I try to find the original. In the original, there is a word, hatir, a Greek word, which can mean both touch or cling. Then I found the key. Jesus says, don't cling to me, not don't touch me. But the translators have interpreted it as don't touch me. The interpreter has entered his own mind in it. Jesus must have said, don't cling to me. Because if there is trust, there is no clinging. If there is love, there is no clinging. You simply share without any clinging. You share in deep relaxedness. Surrendering means surrendering to life, surrendering to the source from where you come and where one day you will go back again. You are just like a wave in the ocean. You come out of the ocean, you go back to the ocean. Surrendering means trusting in the ocean. And of course, what a wave can do except that? The wave has to trust the ocean. And whether you trust or not, you remain part of the ocean. Non-trusting, you will create anxiety, that's all. Nothing will change, only you will become anxious, tense, desperate. If you trust, you flower, you bloom, you celebrate, knowing well that deep down is your mother, your ocean. When tired, you will go back and rest in her being again. When rested, you will come back again to have a taste of the sky and the sunlight and the stars. Surrendering is trusting, and it has nothing to do with any concept of God, any ideology of God. It is an attitude. And then you can understand the meaning of Buddha's last utterance, be a light unto yourself. When he says, be a light unto yourself, he means, if you surrender to life, you have become a light unto yourself. Then the life leads you. Then you always live in enlightenment. When he says, be a light unto yourself, he is saying, don't follow anybody. Don't cling to anybody. Learn from everybody, but don't cling to anybody. Be open, vulnerable, but remain on your own. Because finally, the religious experience cannot be a borrowed experience. It has to be existential. It has to be your own. Only then it is authentic. If I say something and you believe in it, it is not going to help. If I say something and you search and you surrender and you trust, then you also experience the same. Then it has become a light unto yourself. Otherwise, my words will remain words. At the most, they can become beliefs. Unless you experience the truth of them, they cannot become trust. They cannot become your own truth. My truth cannot be yours. Otherwise, it would have been very cheap. If my truth could have been yours, then there was no problem. That is the difference between scientific truth and religious truth. A scientific truth can be borrowed. A scientific truth, once known, becomes everybody else's property. Albert Einstein discovered the theory of relativity. Now there is no need for everybody to discover it again and again and again. That will be foolish. Once discovered, it has become public. No, it is everybody's theory. Once discovered, once proved, no, even a school child can learn it. No genius is needed. You need not be an Albert Einstein. Just a mediocre mind will do. Just an ordinary mind will do. You can understand it. And it is yours. Of course, Einstein had to work for years. Then he came to discover it. You need not work, just few hours. If you are ready to understand and put your mind to it, you will understand. But the same is not true about religious truth. Buddha discovered, or Christ discovered, or Nanak, or Kabir. But their discovery cannot become your discovery. You will have to rediscover again. You will have to move again from ABC. You cannot just believe in them. That won't help. And that's what humanity has been doing. Mistaking religious truth for scientific truth. It is not scientific truth. It can never become a public property. Each individual has to come to it alone. Each individual has to come to it again and again. It can never become available in the market. You will have to pass through the hardship. You will have to seek and search. And the same path you will have to follow. It cannot be even made a shortcut. You will have to pass through the same austerities as a Buddha and the same difficulties as the Buddha. And you will have to suffer the same calamities on the path as the Buddha. And you will remain in the same hazard as the Buddha. And one day, when the clouds disappear, you will dance and be as ecstatic as the Buddha. Of course, when an Archimedes discovers, he runs naked in the streets. Eureka, I have found it. You can understand Archimedes within minutes, within seconds. But you will not be ecstatic. Otherwise, every school child will run naked in the street, Eureka. Nobody is doing that since Archimedes did it. Only once. For Archimedes, it was a discovery. Since then, it has become a public property. It is good that the religious truth cannot be transferred to you. Otherwise, you will never achieve to the same ecstasy as Buddha, or Jesus, or Krishna. Never. Because you will learn it in a school textbook. Any fool will transfer it to you. Then the whole orgasmic experience will be lost. It is good that religious experience has to be experienced individually. Nobody can lead you there. People can indicate the way. And those indications are very subtle. Don't take them literally. Buddha said, be a light unto yourself. He's saying that remember, my truth cannot be your truth. My light cannot be your light. Imbibe the spirit from me. Become more thirsty from me. Let your search be intense be totally devoted to it. Learn the devotion of a truth seeker from me, but the truth, but the light will burn within you. You will have to kindle it within you. You cannot borrow it. Truth cannot be transferred. It is not a property. It is such a subtle experience. It cannot even be expressed. It is inexpressible. One at the most tries to give few hints. The second question, please explain the nature of the experiences we call boredom and restlessness. Boredom and restlessness are deeply related. Whenever you feel boredom, then you feel restlessness. Restlessness is a byproduct of boredom. Try to understand the mechanism. Whenever you feel bored, you want to move away from that situation. Somebody is saying something and you are getting bored. You start becoming fidgety. Subtle indications that you want to move from this place, from this man, from this nonsense talk. Your body starts moving. Of course, because of politeness, you suppress it. But the body is already on the move, because body is more authentic than the mind, and body is more honest and sincere than the mind. The mind is trying to be polite, is smiling. You say, how beautiful. And inside you are saying, how horrible. And I have listened to this story so many times, and he is telling it again. I have heard about Albert Einstein's wife, Frau Einstein. A friend of Albert Einstein used to come many times, and Einstein will say some anecdote, some joke, and will laugh. He became curious about one thing. Whenever he will come and whenever Einstein will start saying jokes, Einstein was a Jew. And Jews have the best jokes of the world, because they have suffered so long. They have lived by jokes. Their life has been so miserable that they had to tickle themselves. Hence, they have the most beautiful jokes. No other country, no other race can compete with them. In India, we don't have good jokes at all, because the country has lived very peacefully. No need to tickle. Humor is needed when one is in constantly danger. One needs to laugh at anything. Any excuse will do to laugh. And Einstein will say some joke, some anecdote, some story, and they both will laugh. The friend became curious, because whenever Einstein will start saying something, the wife will immediately start knitting or doing something. He asked, why? The moment Einstein starts saying some jokes, why you start knitting? The wife said, if I don't do anything, it will be tremendously difficult for me to tolerate, because I have heard that joke 1,001 times. You come sometimes, I am always here. Anybody comes and he says the same joke. If I don't do something with my hands, I will become so fidgety that it will be almost impolite. So I have to do something so I can move my restlessness into work, and I can hide behind the work. Whenever you feel bored, you will feel restless. Restlessness is an indication of the body that the body is saying, move away from here. Go anywhere, but don't be here. But the mind goes on smiling and eyes sparkling, and you go on saying that you are listening, and such a beautiful thing, you have never heard it. The mind is civilized. The body is still wild. The body is still animal. The mind is human. The mind is false. The body is true. The mind knows the rules and regulations, how to behave and how to behave rightly. So even if you see a boar, you say that I am so happy, so glad to see you. And deep down, if you were allowed, you would kill this man. He tempts you to murder. Then you become fidgety. Then you feel restlessness. If you listen to the body and run away, the restlessness will disappear. Try it. Try it. Somebody is boring you. You simply start jumping and running around. See, restlessness will disappear. Because restlessness simply shows that the energy does not want to be here. The energy is already on the move. The energy has already left this place. Now you follow energy. So the real thing is to understand boredom, not restlessness. Boredom is a very, very significant phenomenon. Only man feels boredom, no other animal. You cannot make a buffalo bored. Impossible. Only man gets bored. Because only man is conscious. Consciousness is the cause. The more sensitive you are, the more alert you are, the more conscious you are, the more you will feel bored. In more situations you will feel bored. A mediocre mind does not feel so much bored. He goes on. He accepts whatever is okay. He is not so alert. The more alert you become, the more fresh, the more you will feel. If some situation is just a repetition, if some situation is just getting hard on you, if some situation is just stale, the more sensitive you are, the more bored you will become. Boredom is an indication of sensitivity. Trees are not bored, animals are not bored, rocks are not bored, because they are not sensitive enough. This has to be one of the basic understandings about your boredom, that you are sensitive. But Buddhas are also not bored. You cannot bore a Buddha. And animals are not bored, and Buddhas are not bored. So boredom exists as a middle phenomenon between the animal and the Buddha.